You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is...
Thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I am super excited to have Liz Fenton and Lisa Steinke back on the show with me today. They have a brand new book that when you're hearing this podcast, it came out yesterday, and that book is called How to Save a Life. It's phenomenal. This is a must-have for your summer reading shelf. And thank you guys for joining me again, Lisa and Liz.
Thanks for having us.
You're so welcome. You know, the last time we talked, we kind of did that whole question that we start with, your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller. But since we've already kind of covered that base, Liz, what is your favorite thing about being an author right now?
Oh, wow. I've never gotten that question. So that's a great question. You know, I think my favorite thing is, you know, people are really going through a lot of things right now. And I think as authors, it's nice to be able to provide an escape for them or give them all the feels or just, be able to kind of have that avenue to touch people because it's crazy right now.
Yes, it is. I don't think any of us, when we saw 2020 coming, when we celebrated New Year's, none of us saw this coming. This has been such a weird year. But Lisa, what is it about being an author in 2020 that excites you?
Well, the fact that we can still be an author in 2020 excites me.
Right.
You know, and there are so many people that have lost their jobs and we really feel for them and we feel so blessed that we're still able to do our job and that people are still buying books. So just really grateful for that. You have to find the silver lining right now.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I talk to a lot of authors and the fact that we spend a lot of time kind of in our offices, in our writing room with just us and a computer. When we have a kind of a big event like this lockdown, this quarantine that we've been going through, a lot of authors' day-to-day life hasn't changed that much. Our routines are kind of similar, but there's kind of a mental aspect to this thing and it's affecting people in different ways. Lisa, has this time affected you and your productivity, your creativity? Has this changed you as a person at all?
Yes, it's funny that you mentioned that because for me, I usually write at home in my office. I'm not a big coffee shop person when I write. So in that regard, nothing has changed for me in terms of my day-to-day life. As far as creativity, it didn't stifle that either. In fact, I was driving us to finish our next book right at the beginning of all this. Liz said something like, oh, I thought we were going to kind of just get a break and binge watch TV, but you had, you cracked the whip on us. So I just said, let's just keep going. I'm kind of a control freak and I needed to feel like I had some sense of control over what was going on. So that's the only way I knew how was just to keep writing.
What about you, Liz? Has this changed or affected you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, as Lisa mentioned, I think when we first all went into quarantine, I just wanted to have Zoom happy hours and like champagne cocktails every night. But, we both have controlling aspects to our personality and I think they manifest differently. And I think with Lisa's, when she feels out of control, she wants to control what she could control, which was finishing the book. And it was absolutely the right decision. So I'm really happy that we were able to finish the book. I think like everybody, like I have good days and bad days. I like today I feel really creative and productive. And then you have days where you just you feel like, is this the world? You know, you start worrying about the future. And so, you know, I think if anything, it's made us more empathetic. I've learned a lot in 2020 and not just from a creative point of view, but also listening to other voices and understanding issues better. And, you know, I think we're trying to make 2020 a year where we're both evolving, in a lot of ways. So again, we do really try to silver lining it, but, you know, some days I'm really creative, some days.
The last time we talked, you guys told us this great story of your near lifelong friendship and how your creative process really sprang from this friendship that you guys already had. Just to recap, Liz, could you kind of tell people the story of the two of you and why you decided to start writing together? You know, how this friendship evolved into a writing partnership.
Right. So Lisa and I met our freshman year of high school when we were 14, and we went to college together as well. And it was there we talked about writing a book together. I don't think either of us really thought that we would. It was kind of a pie in the sky type thing. About 10 years later, Lisa came to me, and we were both ensconced in very successful careers. Lisa was working in TV. I was working in the pharmaceutical industry. And we just started writing together. And that was a 5-year process from that point to get an agent and a publishing deal. And that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of how we came to be.
Lisa, do you guys have roles that each of you kind of take on in the writing partnership? And does in the very beginning of a project where the brainstorming phase and where stories start coming together, do you guys have certain roles that you play in the beginning of a story?
In the beginning, I think the roles we usually play is Liz will typically come up with the idea. I think all but one she came up with. And so she'll come to me with an idea. And then I think my role is I will kind of help, you know, flesh that out and help decide what characters. I mean, she's doing it too with me, but you know, what it's really a joint brainstorm, but I think I'm good at kind of, you know, drawing it out a little bit more and figuring out like the arcs of the story. And she's good at, you know, just really creative kind of big picture. I'm a little bit more small picture, I think. So more. I think that's really why we worked well together.
Noveler is the best way to write a novel. Why? Quite simply because we've made it the easiest place to do it. Writing a novel is hard enough. Noveler takes care of all the logistical bits of writing a novel, just leaving that small matter of the words to you. It's a clean, beautiful writing interface with writing analytics, goals and streaks, advanced grammar checking, version control, day, evening, and night modes, and many other features designed to take all the stress out of writing. Tell us what you need and we'll build it. Together, we'll build a better tool. With a design-led approach, all the right tools that you need, Noveler saves all your words constantly, allows you to manage and order your novel easily. It's accessible from any device, desktop or mobile. It syncs to Google Drive and Dropbox. It allows exports in various formats, including ebook and more. It also has nice touches like allowing you to write both offline and online, unique for a web-based platform. Everyone needs help with their writing from inspiration through to grammar checking, so we're doing our best to provide that support. We integrate that support directly into Noveler. Our advanced grammar checker powered by Pro Writing Aid does everything from spell check to style advice. Our writing courses include the incredible Tim Clare's Couch to ADK. We're really excited to offer all Author Stories listeners 30% off Noveler for a whole year. and it doesn't matter if you choose to sign up for the monthly or annual plan. You'll get 30% off. All you need to do is use the discount code Hank when you sign up. Novler, N-O-V-L-R. That's novler.org. Gotcha. Liz, in the beginning of a story where that first kernel of the idea starts to come about, what usually triggers that? Are you thinking about a character? Is it, you know, a situation you're thinking about, maybe a news article that you read? Where does that first kernel usually come from?
It usually is almost derived from a plot, not character. And it typically can just be like, let's say there's a, like for The Good Widow, my husband and I were traveling to, I think, out of the country somewhere, very long flight. I think it was Australia. And he left to go get a one of those things you put around your neck. I'm forgetting what it's called. I'm looking at Lisa.
Neck pillow.
He went to get a neck pillow, and he was gone for he was gone for like over 30 minutes. And I, in that time period, and he didn't take a cell phone with him, of course. So in that time period, I went through like a lot of different scenarios of like what could have happened to him. And of course he came back and I was like, where the hell were you? And he's like, and we went to Australia. But that was the first kernel. I told Lisa the story, and it's like, something's here about your husband. Just, you know, my husband's a very like normal guy. Like if he just disappeared, it would be like crazy. I mean, he's a very predictable person, and we've been married a long time. And what does that look like if someone you love disappears and you can't get those answers, and they're not even the person you thought they were. And that, so it's kind of like that, like a scenario will happen and you start asking yourself narrative questions that can lend itself. And that ended up being The Good Widow, where Jax wakes up and her husband is dead, and he was supposed to be in Kansas, but he was in Maui and with someone else. And, you know, it was the same narrative question, like someone you love isn't the person you thought they were, and what that looks like.
Lisa, since you're more of the fine detail person, as you said earlier, when Liz starts telling you a story like this, or the ideas for a story, does your brain start, you know, digging into the details, or how does it kind of take root for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was a television producer for a long time. And so, you know, my team would bring me ideas and I'd have to figure out like how to lay it out and make it into a show. So I automatically go there, like, you know, how should we lay out the story? Cause that's a big one for both of us, is how we tell it, and in coming up with creative ways to bring maybe a similar story that someone else has brought. So we try to find creativity in how we lay it out. So I immediately will go there and start thinking about, you know, how will it start? What's going to be the climax, you know? And then I'll move into, well, who are the people in the scenario and what do they do for a living? So I just kind of start thinking about characters after I've thought about how to lay it out.
Has Liz ever brought you a story idea and just nothing clicks for you? And you're just like, yeah. I don't think there's a story there.
Yes, I have to, about these dueling piano players. Like, she was really into that. We went on a cruise together, and it was this piano bar. I never went in, but two people play the piano at the same time, or right? I don't even know how it works, but.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, it was kind of interesting. We were on the cruise and there was a dynamic between them. And then I'm like, how did this chick who has a great voice end up like singing on the cruise? And she's obviously had an affair with the other guy. And then it didn't go well. And then the third guy, he had something to do. I mean, there was a story there.
I just couldn't come up with anything. I guess if I'm not feeling it, I guess we just both have to really be feeling it. And I've come up with ideas. There's a reason I'm not the ideas person. I had an idea. I wanted to do kind of like this Blake Crouch ripoff story. And I really kept pushing it. And she's like, no, this is not going to work. Yeah, it goes both ways.
You know, 2020, we have some pretty great technology at our hands now, but how do you guys handle the back and forth of the writing? What do the mechanics look like? Liz, I'll give that to you.
Okay. We just pass it back and forth. I mean, I'll write a chapter. I send it to Lisa. She edits it. We flip it back and forth till it's clean, and then she'll start the next one. We just try to make sure that we're each like starting on blank paper every other chapter. That's really important. It's a very different process starting on blank paper versus me getting a chapter. Even if I end up rewriting half of her chapter, I still have something to go on, and it's a completely different process than having a blank page and starting off and creating a whole scene.
Lisa, do you consider yourselves, the writing partnership here, more of a pantser partnership, or do you plan out the book ahead of time? What does that look like? And are you different as a team than you are individually?
I would say we're definitely pantsers. And I mentioned earlier that we will start trying to think about how to lay the book out and maybe who the characters are, but we don't get much deeper than that. I mean, we know the basic story, but we like to leave it open because that just lends itself to a better book, I think, because we're open to any idea that kind of can come up along the way. For example, if I write chapter 2 and I know the character's supposed to go to the grocery store and I just have to make sure I achieve that, I can write it however I want. And then when Liz gets it, it's like a surprise. Maybe it's a good surprise, maybe it's a bad surprise, but it's still a surprise to her. And so I think that keeps us going. If I were to write alone, which I'm never going to do, I think it would be impossible and I wouldn't be good at it. But if I ever did, I think I would be the same way. Because, you know, when I was younger, I would just write like creative, you know, stories or whatever. I was like that. I didn't think the whole thing through. I just sort of went pen to paper and saw, you know, to see what came out.
Liz, what about you? If you were to write independently, would your process change, do you think?
Well, I'm like Lisa. I mean, I don't really ever foresee that happening. I think that we kind of fill out each other's strengths and weaknesses in a very unique way that I think it would fall flat if we were doing it by ourselves. Oh, I would definitely be a pantser. I probably would write myself into a corner a little bit. I'm like Lisa. I like the organic. I like to have a structure, but I don't want to be locked in on a chapter or like even on a storyline or even on an ending. I mean, you have to, for us, everybody's different, but for us, we give ourselves license to change all those things along the way.
Gotcha. The last time we talked, you guys had a brand new book out at the time. It was called Girls Night Out. And, you know, that had me questioning everyone around me. at least a week where, you know, I was judging everyone's motives and all of that great stuff. So that's the mark of a great book when it like affects you so deeply that you, you know, question your loved ones. after that, we didn't get to talk last year, but you guys had a book come out called The Two Lila Bennetts. Could you kind of recap that for me and kind of where did that book come from and what's it about? And I'll pitch that to Lisa. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I thought we were alternating, so I was going to take it. Yeah. It was called The Two Lila Bennetts, and we really love the movie Sliding Doors. So we were thinking about a way to reimagine that. And if you haven't seen the movie, it's basically one decision the character makes splits her life into two, and you get to see how each of those lives play out based on that decision. And so we thought that would make a really great book. And so Lila was a criminal defense attorney. And in one life, she was kidnapped and held hostage. And in the other life, she evades capture, but is constantly looking over her shoulder, knowing someone's after her.
Liz, what are some of the things about that book that you love? What was it that really got your wheels turning?
I really love Lila. I mean, she's a really complicated character. I mean, she's not particularly likable, but you'll find And I think readers may not like this, but they're going to see parts of themselves in her. And maybe it's the parts of themselves they don't want to admit are there. But, you know, what I really love about Lila is she goes through a discovery of herself. It's kind of forced. But it is, I love that in a book when a character is forced to look at themselves in a completely different way. And that's something Lila has to do. And I think that, you know, even though you may not like her at first, I think you come around to understand her better.
But isn't that something that we love about novels, though, Liz, is that we do get to see pieces of ourselves, but not in an accusatory way. We right. get to look at ourselves, you know, almost without the judgment of someone else, and get to address things that we know about ourselves that maybe we don't want to admit. But we kind of get to watch that play out in someone else and hopefully course correct for ourselves without,
right.
You know, I mean, that's kind of one of the great things about fiction, isn't it?
Well, right. And, you know, the thing is, and we always say this, no, people are not all good and all bad, and characters in books shouldn't be either. So a lot of choices that Lila makes, you kind of can spin it either way. I don't think any of them are black and white. And her reasoning, I think, makes more sense. So, yeah, I think we all have a little bit of Lila in us, whether we care to admit it or not. And so she was a really fun character to write.
So the new book just released yesterday, I think, when people are hearing this. It just came out. How to Save a Life. There's a bit of Groundhog Day about this book. And, you know, those of us who are kind of a certain age, you know, this story, this movie really resonates with us. Lisa, what was the first inkling that this was going to be a story like that?
Well, we were on vacation together, and in this particular case, it was a brainstorm. We knew we needed to think of our next book idea. Actually, I was pushing us to think of our next book idea, and we started talking about time loops, and we both love Groundhog Day. There was also a show on TV called Russian Doll, and we just thought, how could we, you know, put a spin on this concept? And then we thought, well, we'll make it a love story, and we'll make it, you know, he's trying to save her life.
Liz, there's a touch of magic to this book, but not in the sense that this is a fantasy or an urban fantasy book. Could you talk a little bit about weaving the supernatural, if you want to look at it that way, into, right. You know, a mainstream story, and how, you know, how do you do that and without losing certain readers, or, you know, where people just want to go along with you on the story?
Right. So, yeah, that particular genre, it would fall under magical realism. And what that means yeah. is you have a magical plot device, so to say, but the book is steeped in realism. Like, you know, Dom's living his everyday life. There's this thing happening to him that is magical, but he's living out like everyday scenario. There's no dragon. I mean, you know, he's living his life. So it's a very difficult balance. You know, our first three books were magical realism, and we learned a lot of lessons writing those, working with our editor at Atria Books. Is you can't have too much of the it's really exactly what you just said, where like you can't get too supernatural. And I know when we were writing The Status of All Things, we kind of got too into how it was happening, and when there was this fairy god, and we had to take that all out because our editor was just like, hey, we need more realism and less magical. And so a lot of people ask us this question that are writing in this genre, and you just have to remember that it's just a plot device to get the character to be going through this arc in a certain way, but you don't want to make it too heavy into the storyline.
Scribophile is a respectful online writing workshop and writers community. Writers of all skill levels join to improve each other's work with thoughtful critiques and by sharing their writing experiences. We're the writing group to join if you want to find beta readers, get the best feedback around, learn how to get published, and be a part of the friendliest and most successful writing workshop online. Improve your writing by receiving detailed critiques. Learn from a vast collection of free writing resources. Make lifelong friends in our busy community of writers. Writing is a solitary art, but that doesn't mean you have to be lonely. Lucky for you, there are thousands of writers on Scribophile every day, and we're a really friendly bunch. You've never seen a writing group like this one. Join Scribophile today at scribophile.community.
Liz, do you remember what the first kernel of this story that you had? Do you remember where this story was birthed from?
Oh, for How to Save a Life?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, we as Lisa mentioned, we were on vacation and we had just finished a book called The Seven and a Half Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, if you haven't read it, it's a great book. It's about this guy who wakes up every day in a different person's body at the same party. And he's trying to figure out. Now, it's a narrative. It's very different than How to Save a Life. It's a narrative novel. You know, it's very character driven, you know, the lengthy narrative. But we thought it was really interesting, you know, to look at every day in a different point of view, but you're in the same day. So you're taking all that knowledge. So then it was just like, you know, in Seven and a Half Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, he's trying to solve this particular mystery. So we, you know, then the narrative question is, well, what is Dom trying to solve? Well, he's trying to save Mia's life. And as he goes through, there's other things he has to, other pieces of the puzzle with other people in his life and people that he meets. And he's trying to figure those things out too.
Lisa, do you remember when Liz first started talking to you about this story?
Yes. She finished the Seven and a Half Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle first. And it just, she said, you have to read this book. And you know, it was a really compelling book. And we knew we wanted to kind of get back to our roots with magical realism. So we started thinking about ways we could do that. And so I would say that was right around that same time when we were on vacation. It all kind of just happened right there. November.
So did the character of Dom, who envisioned Dom first, Liz or Lisa?
I don't even remember.
We knew we wanted a male point of view. We'd never written a book from a male's point of view before. So we knew it was going to be a guy. I think Liz might have said he should work in at a news station. But really, together we worked on him because we knew how important he would be. He's our first male point of view, and he was going to be driving the story. So we did work on him for a while, but I think it was pretty collaborative.
What was the most difficult thing, Liz, in writing from the male point of view? Was that a difficult transition for you, or did it just feel effortless?
Felt effortless, but I think it's always, you know, hopefully we did him justice. I think that, you know, I know we both have a lot of male friends and, you know, I think that kind of looking from that and our, you know, we've both been married a long time and I mean, we both have a little crush on Dom, to be honest. I think we both wrote the guy like we'd want to date, like if we were at that age. Maybe. Yeah. At least I did. That's what I was doing. Lisa, I don't know what you were doing.
I was doing that too. I think he's so cute and I just love him.
There's a tagline in some of the marketing material for the book. It says Dom is having a very bad day, one he literally can't escape. Lisa, when you first started, when you guys started talking about this and the story was growing, when did you know that you were going to have him playing out this day over and over? And did that excite you when you started kind of realizing that this mechanic would work for the story?
Yeah, I think that idea came about right away. We knew we wanted him to be reliving the same day, but we didn't exactly know what was going to happen. We tossed around a bunch of different ideas of what he was going through because we knew You know, to put a character in a time loop, in a repetitive time loop, you know, it's tricky. You don't want the reader to think, oh, I'm going to pick up this book and I'm just going to read the same thing over and over again. So, you know, it was our work was to make each day, while it's the same, different. And I know that might sound weird, but the days are exactly the same that he's living, but they are very different at the same time. He goes through different things. He meets different people. And so it was just making sure that we were very creative in that regard. And we have heard from a lot of readers that they feel like we did that very well, that they didn't feel like it was repetitive what they were reading.
Liz, tell me about the character of Mia and how does she factor into the story?
Well, Mia is Dom's long lost love. You know, they were engaged and he broke things off. You know, they were young. They were 24 or so. And so she's back. And I think Mia is a bit of a mystery. You know, we don't tell the story from Mia's point of view at all. And that's by design. You know, so she is kind of a mystery. She's a free spirit. And, you know, Dom is a buttoned up kind of guy. And I think that the things he both loves and fears about Mia are the same. It's just that free spirit. And, you know, he likes things, you know, he likes to know what's going to happen. She likes to not know what's going to happen. So I love Mia. She's a lot of fun. I think I would want to be friends with her. And I think she'd be fun to go to Vegas with.
Yes. You might not depend on her to watch your kids, but she'd be fun to go to Vegas with. Lisa, if you talk to people that are not writers, they sometimes get the idea that every one of your characters has to be based on someone that you know, that there's, you know, that they don't quite get the concept that these imaginary people just take up residence inside your head and they're fully formed people of their own accord, you know, in a lot of cases. But when you start thinking about a new story and Dom and Mia specifically, do these characters just kind of, you know, start taking on form and shape and characteristics of their own? Are there real people that influence these characters? Or kind of talk a little bit about character development, if you would, please.
Okay, I would say that in our writing, we tend to develop our characters as we're writing the book. We know going in, you know, he's Dom, he works at a news station, you know, he has a roommate, you know, we know the basics and we know he's very buttoned up, but the characters really start presenting themselves to us as we're writing the book. And we like it that way because as we're getting into the story, they're kind of telling us who they are. And so that's what happened definitely with Dom. What was the second part of your question?
And are these people ever kind of based on reality or...
Oh, right. Yes. Well, we did interview, you know, a head of a news station just for research. Dom is not based on that particular individual. That's about as close as we'd get, I'd say. We do not base it on anybody we know, but people have thought in the past that certain characters were them, but they weren't. I mean, I think you go through life and maybe you pick something up subconsciously from a person you interact with, but that's about as close as it gets.
Liz, the more you write, of course, the better at your craft that you get. But you know, there comes a point where a project kind of reaches a crescendo, and you finish it, and there's the euphoria of that, and then you know you go through the editing and all that. But the kind of the heavy lifting is done, and then you send this book out into the public. And, you know, all the accolades come and the book sales and all that's amazing. And then the next project comes along and you're back to the blank screen, the blank page. And it, you know, no matter what you've accomplished and learned along the way, you're still sitting there with a blank page. Each project begins brand new all over again. As you and Lisa have done all this amazing work together and you put out so many books. Does it get easier in the beginning, or is the beginning still nerve-wracking and exhausting?
Well, I don't want to speak for Lisa. I don't think it gets any easier. I have an anxiety that goes into starting every book at like, how are we going to do this again? Like, can we do this again? And especially if you've had a book that's been very successful coming before it, you know, well, there's a lot of pressure with that. So once, you know, for me, the biggest anxiety is just getting those first words on the page. I actually really enjoy writing the first third of the book, and the last third of the book are my favorite parts. The middle, I'm kind of like, ah. But yeah, I don't think it gets any easier. And I think people think for writers that it does, but it doesn't. I think that, you know, it's always a challenge, and it's always a challenge to find inspiration. And every writer will tell you, writing a book that feels inspired and writing a book that you're not inspired about are two very, very different things. They both can turn out to be great, successful books, but the process in which you get there is very, very different.
Yeah. What about you, Lisa? How do you feel about the creative process and starting all over again every time? And especially like Lisa mentioned, I mean, like Liz mentioned, that mushy middle. You know, how do you power through that?
Yeah, I mean, I am always really excited to start the next book, but I do, because I love writing, it's definitely my passion. You know, I mentioned that my prior career was in TV, and while I was good at it, it was never my passion. So I get really excited to sit down and start doing it. I absolutely love it. But I do look at the screen thinking, how in the world? Because every book is different. And every book you write differently. So it's you're taking your you know, your own expertise, I guess, and putting it in, but it's not going to be the same as before. So it's like starting, it's like writing your first book every single time to me. That's how it feels. But you know, it's exciting. As far as the middle, we talk a lot about the saggy middle and how to avoid that. And I think we're really good at it because every chapter ends sort like as a cliffhanger where you need to turn to the next page. And I don't even feel like there was a middle in this book in that regard, because he was just fast paced, trying to figure out how he could save Mia's life. And every page, you know, you're trying to get there as a reader, too. So I think we execute it very well in this book in particular.
Absolutely.
If I do say it on myself, I'm totally.
I was like, wow, you're really high on us. Great job, girl. Amazing.
Well, How to Save a Life is out, available everywhere now. That means that it's probably been off of you guys' desk for months and months and months now. Liz, what are you guys working on now?
Well, we, as Lisa mentioned earlier, we did finish a manuscript during quarantine. We can't say too much about it because we're not quite sure what's going to happen with it. But we will say it deals with the same issues of fate and destiny. And can you control those things, and should you? So it's in the same vein as a lot of our other novels. That's all we can say for now.
Love it. I love it. How to Save a Life is out, available everywhere now. There's links to it in the show notes. And we're going to send everyone to see you guys. Lisa, where can people find you online if they want to dig into all the great stuff you do?
Well, our website is lizandlisa.com. We're very active on Instagram, which is @LisaAndLiz. And our Facebook page is Liz Fenton and Lisa Steinke. We're also on Twitter, but admittedly not as much as the others, and that's @LizAndLisa.
Excellent. We'll link that up as well so that everyone can find you guys easily. How to Save a Life, available everywhere now. Liz Fenton, Lisa Steinke, thank you so much for taking time to come back on the show today.
Thanks for having us. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world-building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 250,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too.